Technorama episode 340 for April 18, 2012, Command Line Snowstorm.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Psst. Where can the Koreans get a new rocket? Cheap.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for April 18, 2012. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. Welcome back. How are you, Craig?
Man, I'm doing great. I had a good weekend. I don't know about you, but I'm ready to get back to work.
I had a good week also. My feet are a little sunburned from playing golf in sandals without sunscreen. Kind of a dumb idea, but
wait,
you get the point.
You played in sandals?
I have golf sandals. They're cool.
Okay.
Birks. They're comfortable.
Birkenstocks.
But wait. No, don't wear socks.
No, I said Birkenstocks.
No.
Not socks.
No, just bring sunscreen. Otherwise, you wind up with funny tan lines on your feet.
Yeah. And they're not comfortable either.
We could go on about stories all week long. And you're going to tell us a little bit about Create South in a little bit.
Yeah,
but coming up in this episode, we have news from the Trekverse, how to use math to get out of a traffic ticket, and Walmart has the lowest prices on 10-year-old tech. All that and more coming up right after this.
Sign me up.
Hi. Do you like geeky podcasts? Of course you do. Do you like free stuff? Hey, who doesn't? If you like podcasts and winning free stuff, then you'll love the Great Geeky Podcast iTunes Review Contest. All you have to do is leave some iTunes reviews for some great podcasts and email your name and the name of your iTunes review in, and you'll be entered into a contest for some great prizes, including DVDs, action figures, posters, and more. There's even a complete Buffy DVD setup for grabs. Head on over to BetweenTheLinesStudios.com/contest to read the list of participating podcasts and complete entry rules. Even if you don't use iTunes, there's some great ways to get some entries by sharing the contest on Twitter and Facebook. The contest ends May 15th, so make sure you get your reviews in quickly.
Each week we do this show live, and normally we'd be doing this on Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time, and this is the part of the show where we'd normally give a shout out to the chat room. I say normally because Craig got back from Create South this last weekend and texted me about 30 minutes E4 showtime and said, "I'm beat. I'm dead.
It was earlier
Let's
than
record
that.
Monday night.
It was earlier than that.
Okay, it was about 4 hours before showtime.
See?
But you were also kind enough to put together all the show notes before you left, which was very nice, by the way. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, I thought, I was like, maybe I could just soldier through it. And I went, no, I'm about to fall out. So
did you sit down? That's usually when I crash.
That had a lot to do with it, yes.
Yeah, you sit down and you're doomed. Yeah. It's like going to any convention or conference or anything. So, with rare exception, we're recording these on Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern, and we'd like to see you there on Google Plus. We do this via Hangout, and we'd give a shout out to the chat room if we had one, but the couch is empty right now. So
we'll just yell at the chat room.
We'll see you there. So yeah. We'll jump to the birthday calendar, of which we're going to make up for lost time because we did have a week off. Happy birthday, April 4th. We have a couple of them, Brian K. and Joel McLaughlin, a.k.a. Gorkin. April 5th, oh my gosh, this must be like Baby Boomer Day. We have Chad Davis, John Isler, which is also Hecklestiff. Hecklestiff. I can never say that. I'd like to buy a vowel, Vanna. We have Griffin Sylvester. We have Martine Teismans, who's Yorga's mom. Quick story. You know Yorga sends us postcards every once in a while, right?
Yes, that's right.
Hey, the latest one was from Prague. Did you get the Prague postcard?
I think so. Yes.
When I was in Arizona, I had a lightning bolt of insight. I'm going to start sending him postcards from around the U.S. because I'll be in Phoenix in the beginning of April, Orlando in late April, New Orleans in May, San Diego in July. So I figure it's time to pay back the man after all he sends us those lovely postcards.
We'll have to do a DragonCon one as well.
I sent him one, and while I purchased it, I was also in the bookstore with Scott Sigler. So he signed my book, and he also signed the postcard. So I sent that to Jorga.
All of them?
All of what?
Oh, I thought you said more. I thought you had more than one postcard. I was like,
no,
what?
I just bought the Arizona postcard for Jorga.
I got you.
So he said, Jorga, stay out of trouble, and then he put down his chicken scratch. So, Jorga, if you get this postcard, you have no idea who wrote that. It was Scott Sigler, and then I wrote underneath it. So, happy birthday, Jorga's mom. Ringmaster Greg from Dancing with Elephants, or formerly from Dancing with Elephants, should we say. April 5th also. April 6th is Trevor Litecki, future geek. Does that mean he's going to be a geek someday?
Maybe, you know, we all have our aspirations.
Okay. April 7th was PC Herring's birthday. Happy birthday, Paul. April 14th, Danny Harnish. Now we're up to the present day. Turn back the calendar. Scafey, a.k.a. Anthony, on April 18th, April 19th, is Susie the Geek's daughter from How to Grow Your Geek, Amanda. We met her at DragonCon last year. And
I guess,
finally,
I
April...
Geek in Training, is that also a future geek?
I guess. We're going to have to come up with something like license plates or T-shirts or something. And Runtime is on April 23rd. Happy birthday to everybody. If you're on the birthday calendar, we wish you all the best. If you don't have your name on the birthday calendar, you can get there. Go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. We'd love to see you there, and we'll wish you a happy birthday at the appropriate time of year. Even if you're not there, have a great birthday. Or we hope you had a great birthday, is in our case. It sounds like about 6 weeks worth of backlog.
Hey, I just had a weird idea. I don't know why this came to me right now.
What came to you right now?
I want to get a T-shirt that has a TARDIS, like it's, you know, the like you're looking at the back of it, like it's going away.
Yes.
And it has student driver on the back.
Student TARDIS driver.
But the doctor's always driving it. I just thought it was weird. Okay.
If you don't like my driving, stay out of the continuum.
Yeah.
Stay out of the universe.
What they call the cell phone, the trans something? Yeah.
Like the trans-dimensional reception on his cell phone?
Yeah. complaints call. Yeah. If you don't like my driving, call. All right.
On with the news.
The news.
First up, we have, what do you call these? Oh, I'm sorry. I was one story ahead. From Trek Today, we have news that the latest Star Trek Phase 2 episode is out. And this is based on, what was it, a script that was written in the 70s?
Yeah,
and
it's
then
like
shelved
the episode,
for the movie.
It's based upon John Pobble's script originally written for Star Trek Phase 2. You remember the ill-fated TV show that turned into Star Trek the movie?
Okay.
The motion picture,
yep,
rather.
Yep.
Which was abandoned and when attention was instead going towards the motion picture. The story then became the inspiration for a Next Generation episode. If you remember that one that Deanna Troi got pregnant and everybody was like, well, what should we do? You know, that little light went down into her belly.
Get anyway. In my belly.
Yeah. So this is like the original script. So I haven't seen it yet. I haven't really had a chance to watch it. So
is this going to look like the first two or three episodes of Next Generation where you go, hey, they're just repurposing all the original series. Are we going to go, this is familiar, this is familiar, yeah, this is familiar?
No, well, this is the original script. No, I hope not. I would rather them go a little more original on the stories than rehash something, but, you know.
Look at the size of the hickey on that girl.
Look at
James
Kelly.
That was
look
a skin condition, like a plague that is overrunning the Enterprise.
Yeah. Look at James Cowley. Look at his cheek.
He's got a hickey on his cheek. Yeah. Oh, that's where she slapped him from giving her a hickey.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Hey, baby.
So I need to watch this. I I like them. I think they do a great job, especially with the ship and all the uniforms and all that
good
stuff.
Oh, the detail on the props is outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't know that Captain Kirk didn't look like that, you wouldn't know that this didn't come from non-canon. No, it didn't come from non-canon. You get the idea. So anyway, all the episodes are good. This is like the this is the seventh episode. Wow.
We have a bit of bad news. Sorry to report that Jack Trammell, I think that's how you say it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He passed away. And you say, yeah. Who is Jack Trammell, you say? As I was just asking myself until I clicked on the Wikipedia link. No, actually, I read this last week because Craig was kind enough to set up the show notes for me.
Yeah, well, Jack Trammell was actually the founder of Commodore. And, of course, he's got more of a history than that but in his background. But, yes, he was the founder of Commodore. And, you know, of course,
he was involved with Atari for a while and all over the place.
Yep. And, of course, he's responsible for the VIC-20 and the C-64, all that good stuff. But he lived a decent life. It was 83.
Wasn't he a was he a Holocaust survivor?
I'm not sure. He was among many of the survivors of the
Auschwitz.
Alam labor camp who were tracked down by the U.S. Army veteran. Let's see. I'm trying to read it here as we go. But anyway, yes, it says he was in a labor camp.
So, okay.
Yeah, he was also the co-founder of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum.
Passed away on April 8th at the age of 83.
Yeah. I had 64 seconds of silence. I'm sorry.
I did have a
friend that sent me a receipt, and he said he pumped $64.64 with a gas in memorial to Jack Trammell. And he did. I saw the receipt.
Wow. I just filled up with $68.86. So.
Well,
I don't know.
I told him, I said, what was unfortunate is you had the ability to pay that much for gas.
And it was just scary.
You know? So I know I'm kind of joking, but I do appreciate Jack Trammell's.
Wait till the guy who invented the 8386 passes away. That's how much gas will be in my tank.
Yeah. 80 grand. 8,000. That's just next week. What is gas running around your neighborhood?
383. I just saw it on the way home.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a little bit more than I'm paying. About 20 cents less.
It's down about 15 cents from last week and nearly tipped over $4.
Good Lord. You have to get two jobs just to pay for the car.
An advantage of working from home.
Oh, true that. Well, I take the bus, so I just ride up the road and come home.
We have a story about a physicist who got out of a traffic ticket by using math.
He gave everybody hurdy brain, and they just asked him to leave.
I think so. I started reading this. I got hurdy brain. Dmitry Krikoff, I hope I'm saying that right, a UC San Diego physicist, was recently given a ticket for running a stop sign. He went to court to argue the ticket, armed with a scientific paper that would mathematically demonstrate that he really had stopped, and he won! I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he called this thing the proof of innocence, which he later published. And this is from the paper. We show that if a car stops at a stop sign, an observer, e.g. police officer, located at a certain distance perpendicular to the car trajectory, must have an illusion that the car does not stop if the following three conditions are satisfied. 1. The observer measures not the linear, but angular speed of the car. 2. The car decelerates and subsequently accelerates relatively fast. Now, Lisa argued with me and said deceleration is not even a word because you always accelerate. Anyway, 3, there is a short time obstruction of the observer's view of the car by an external object, e.g. another car, at the moment when both cars are near the stop sign. And apparently all three of these conditions were met. He goes into a longer dissertation. And
then he says, if this car is going 8 miles an hour and this car is going this way at 2 miles an hour, which one gets to point C first?
red.
3.
A duck.
Hey, I think Lisa's right. Decelerates. Actually, it would be better if he said the car slows and subsequently
decreases in velocity. But
there you go. That's another one.
He went on to say that you can observe this phenomenon when you see a train like off in the distance and it's still moving at like 80 miles an hour. And it looks like it's barely even moving. And as it gets closer, it appears to be going faster and faster and faster until its maximum acceleration appears to be when it goes right by you, perpendicular. And then as it goes away, it looks like it's getting slower and smaller and slower and smaller. But it's still moving at the same velocity the whole time. Like, oh, well, that kind of makes sense. So, I mean, I got a piece of what he's saying, but you're right. He gave me a hurdy brain, and I thought he was going to go into, you know,
I think the judge was like, stuff. Oh, for heaven's sake, just get out of here. Dismissed.
Right. Next time, kids, unless you want to write a PhD thesis paper, just stop.
See, science pays.
No, stopping pays.
Oh.
Make a full and complete stop. Look both ways.
I was trying to make one of those, you know, school is cool kind of things. Thanks, Chuck.
I would like to see the video of this, then school is cool. Always carry your video camera. Technology will save your money.
Yeah, save Rodney King.
I wonder if we have listeners that are too young for that.
I'm sure. Oh, boy.
Amanda, probably. Wikipedia Rodney King.
Yeah, go refer to the Geeks in Training. Okay.
All right, on to the Hacks and Strange Stories. Should we get Lenny for that one?
Yes, Lenny, come in here.
Okie dokie. What you need me for?
We need the Hacks and Strange Stories.
Oh, God. Hacks and Strange Stories.
All right, thanks, Lenny. Go back upstairs and finish the dishes.
See you later, guys.
First story up, we have an Apple Macintosh 128K prototype. And you think, oh, well, that's not unusual for sale on eBay. It is if it's got the original 5 1/4 inch Twiggy floppy drive. Ooh. want. Not sure why, but I want this.
I mean, yeah. You know what I mean? It's hard to get a 5 1/4 floppy nowadays.
I got a whole box of them. Apple's Macintosh took many form over the years, from its initial concept by Jeff Raskin as a $500 appliance that contained a built-in keyboard, printer, and 5-inch display, to its ceremonious debut in 1984 with the inflated price that was 5 times its initial vision. For a period in the Mac's development, it was assumed that the computer would feature Apple's proprietary Twiggy 5 1/4 inch floppy disk drive, which also came standard issue on the original Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently, an extremely rare prototype of this 128K Mac with a Twiggy drive has surfaced on eBay, but with an opening bid of $99,000. $995,000. Wow.
Hey, good gravy.
Somebody, well, you charge what the market will bear. Did you check if it's sold yet, Craig?
You know, I have not.
This antique is beyond what most of us could ever afford. Well, the Twiggy disk drive could store an impressive 860 kilobytes of data. It was also notoriously unreliable. So bad, in fact, that one engineer responsible for the drive remarked to Steve Jobs, "Take out your 45 and shoot the friggin' horse in the head." Ultimately, the company did just that, and the original Macintosh shipped with a 3 5-inch drive from Sony that could write only 400 kilobytes to its not so floppy disks. They're partially floppy.
Partially floppy. Well, a quick look on eBay. It says zero bids, so it's still at $99,995. But on the flip side, if you hurry now, you can get it for the buy price of $200 by now.
Oh, darn.
Hey, I don't remember if the Apples, those Macs right there, had that slide-out keyboard under it. It seems like it did, but did they? Do you remember?
It was some kind of tray under the keyboard. Maybe I don't think the 1984 release did. I think that was gone.
Maybe.
But I'm also noticing from some of these screenshots there were some ventilation changes underneath the floppy drive, too.
Yep.
That's interesting. There's like a grill or something underneath the 3.5 that wasn't there on the 5.25.
Yeah, there was a couple of things like that. Well, the you can see the brightness button dial is a different color. Like I said, there's the slider under the keyboard. What else? Oh, you know, something else I thought was funny was, and I know there was this was like this on all the Apple products, but if you look, the Apple logo is every freaking where. It's on the
back. On the mouse. It's on the keyboard, look, but those aren't painted. The only painted one is on the front.
Okay, so we've got the Apple logo. It has the Apple on it. Then you have the rainbow logo right beside it. Then if you look at the close-up shot of the serial cable, on each of the little turn thumb screws, the Apple logo. The power connector.
You know, originally, they wanted the Apple. Was it the Apple? Before they came out with the Clover, the flower command key, they had an Apple. And they wanted that on every menu option that had a hotkey. So it was Apple C, Apple X, Apple V, Apple...
I would look too cluttered, I think.
Yeah, and that's what Jobs said. He said, that's too cluttered. So he stepped in and said, uh-uh.
That's where the underscore came from.
Let's come out with the option and shift key also so we can have long key sequences.
Yeah, take all your fingers and touch the keyboard in this
Control
pattern.
Shift Spock. Command Option Cramp.
That's pretty good. Okay.
Isn't that what you think of when you do the PRAM reset?
Control Spock. Yeah, isn't it? I think I even saw that referred to on a webpage somewhere. Did the Control Alt Spock. Yeah, because it is a pain to try and reset the PRAM on those Macs. You just kind of contort yourself to get the...
They do that on purpose.
Well, yeah.
Probably got to touch your nose with the space bar, too. And it won't work unless it's your nose.
Yeah. Yeah, the nose sensor is going not working.
Well, you came across a rather interesting prediction video with Mr. Arthur C. Clarke, no less.
Yeah.
Author of 2001 and many other famous books and movies and things. So he's being interviewed in, what was this, 1974?
Yeah, it was 1974. Looks like ABC News or something is interviewing him in a computer room, which is very loud to begin with, which is kind of ironic because he's talking about having smaller computers in your house. You're going to do your banking and online. You can pretty much work anywhere you want. It wouldn't matter, which you're a perfect example of that. Look.
A wealth of information at your fingertips, is what he said. And and all the information you'll need to do your homework and everything is right there. I would have asked him, what do you think sideburns and leisure suits will look like in 2001?
Much the same. Crappy.
Will we ever get lamb chops as big as Isaac Asimov?
Well, it's funny you mentioned him because I just saw an article today where it was talking about his predictions for the future, and he had several, you know, of course, well, more than over, you know, ongoing, of course, but there were several interviews with him and how he got things right, like the next decade out on each one, and it was pretty amazing. These guys are so forward-thinking, it's amazing.
There was a thing that I almost put in here for the Remember When that kind of ties into this. What do they call them? Wheelie skates or something? It was basically like about a 10-inch bicycle tire that's strapped on to your shoe. It was similar to a rollerblade, but there was only one wheel. And it kind of went around, and they got these guys tooling like around tread? The sidewalk like in tread? The 1920s.
Like a tread or something? I mean, it was... strung on there like
I mean it was a fairly big tire. I mean about a 1-inch tire, but it was 10 inches in circumference. So I mean it was, and then for support it kind of had a strut that went up to your calf, and then there was another strap up there to stabilize it, otherwise your ankle would break. So these wheels basically rotated around your inseam, you know, maybe 6-8 inches, and they look kind of fun, actually. I was looking at them going, you know, if you actually mounted that to a shoe a little bit better than the old roller skates, you know, those used to clamp the metal roller skates used to clamp onto the bottom of your shoe.
Yeah, because they were resizable.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of like that. So they looked horrifically dangerous, and these guys are going around in their little, you know, John Boy Walton hats and whatnot.
Yeah.
It looked fun. Dangerous, but fun. That fun dangerous we all love.
Of course. If it's not dangerous, then it is not fun.
So speaking of yesteryear, we look at the Remember When, and I found, or did you find this? Who found this?
Which one was it?
I think this was me. I found this.
Oh, okay.
That someone at Walmart must have been cleaning out the shelves. They came across the Sony Mavica, the MVC FD200. Remember the original digital cameras with 2 megapixels, and you could save them directly to floppy. Yeah. They had a floppy disk in them.
I know. Well, a guy at work had one of those things, and you know, at the time, it was like, oh, that's a really cool idea.
No cables, no chips. It's a media that, frankly, I'd be hard pressed to find a computer that had a 3.5-inch floppy these days.
Yeah.
But anyway, someone found this and put it on the shelf for $200.
Should you buy it? Because it looked brand new.
I don't know.
I wonder what it goes for on eBay.
I don't know. I don't think you can get quite that much. If you do, let me know. I got a lot of old crap that I can sell for a pretty good price.
Yeah,
and
right.
I still have many of the same boxes.
Well,
at $270 plus tax, it might seem like a lot to spend on a giant antique digital camera, and you could get a 16 megapixel point and shoot for less, and it would also have features like zooming and a memory card. But on the other hand, it was a pretty good deal. Amazon's selling the Mavica for $1,000.
Wow. Why? You know, at work, I don't know why we bought these, but it was this digital camera, and it wrote to what, the mini DVD-Rs, or rewrites?
Yeah.
I was like, okay, yeah, that was a great idea for the 10 minutes after it came out. But it was slow as Christmas. My gosh. And I think they even still got that thing up
the
there.
The first one I got to use was a Kodak, what was it, like a DC40 or something. And it had memory on board. Not a lot. It was a whole 640 by 480 resolution pictures. So they weren't very big. But you could take digital pictures, and you had to use a serial port to transfer them. With special software from Kodak, of course. But it was slow as all get out. But the pictures weren't very big back then anyway. So it's amazing how far we've come now that you take a picture and poof, it's in the cloud and magically on your computer. You don't even need cables anymore. You don't even need it's crazy.
No, I can shoot the pictures wirelessly to the iPad or internet or whatever. You know, I had my first digital camera that I had was an Olympus. It was a great camera at the time. It was 1 megapixel. But it had a strange memory, and I want to say it was XD memory, but I don't think that's right. Cause I'm looking at XD memory online and it's not quite like that, but it was wafer thin, thinner than the SD cards, a little bit bigger, you know, width and height size wise, but as far as thickness, it was very wafer thin. I even still got the card, but I think the card is corrupt now, so it's gone. I can't even use the camera anymore.
I still got my camera, but here it is. Yeah, see, I tell you, things aren't too far away from me at a moment's notice. I still have my original IBM 340 meg micro drive.
There you go. Those were popular for a while.
The 1 gig was terribly expensive, but this came with the first camera that I bought. The other one was, the Kodak was for work, but this was my first, was the, I can't even remember. Can't remember the make of the camera now. It's on the tip of my tongue, and it's actually downstairs. But it was kind of neat. It had Casio. It was a swivel, so you could turn it and you know, watch yourself be filmed.
Yeah.
Had a nice zoom. It was a 2 megapixel deal, but I went, wow, 340 meg, and you figure most of the 2 megapixel pictures were 7800K, so you get like 400 pictures. This was astounding. Now, sadly, this drive doesn't work anymore. I put it in a card reader the other day. It just goes. So it's got this sad wine.
Why do you still have it?
But
why are you keeping it? Why are you keeping it if it don't work?
Because it's just cool. Little hard drive. Teeny little hard drive.
See? You're a data hoarder.
I'm going to therapy, okay?
Yeah.
All right, we will be right back with the Media Corner, where we have news from the Trekverse, a real-life lag simulation, and a fan film of a popular arcade game you might remember. All that and more coming up right after this.
Geek Thoughts.
If you log into Twitter to get tweets, do you log into Yammer to get yams?
All right, first up in the Media Corner, we have a part six of Star Trek mistakes.
And let me add that all parts are listed on this page. Do you want to describe
it? At TrekMovie.com, you will find, they just basically tell you whatever they said is probably a lie that they said before. I think my personal favorite was from, was it Star Trek Insurrection? Or was it... What was the not Insurrection? What was the last one? Nemesis, where Deanna Troi goes to kiss Riker and she goes, "Yuck! I've never kissed you with a beard." And then they show you like six scenes from the Next Generation series where she's kissed him with a beard.
And same idea with Worf. It's like she seems repulsed by dating Worf, and the next thing you know, she's kissing him.
right. And then he says,
"I don't like Earth weddings. Too many words."
Oh. And then they show a Klingon wedding, and this lady is pontificating for an hour.
"And Kalis came down from the mountain and joined..." Like, good. Yeah, that's much better.
Oh, wait. I know what it was. He goes, "For that kind of recreation, I would need a Klingon woman." And the next thing you know, he's kissing Deanna Troi.
Yeah.
"Well, I'll take whatever I can get."
Yeah, well, she's not quite human, so maybe.
And then I went through with, like, the other... This is a great time suck. Each one of them is about 10 minutes. I got through part six and part one. I didn't make it through the 2, 3, 4, or 5. But they've got some great scenes of Picard. You know, he's opening that priceless statue with the little teeny statuettes inside. And he goes, "Oh, this is the greatest find in archaeology." Yet, later, when the Enterprise crashes and he's looking for his photo album, he tosses this priceless thing aside.
What was the other thing it said? He goes, "Yes, we have grown to not have
possessions. We no longer need possessions and money." And here, yet there's scenes from Deep Space Nine. "How do we get more money? Dad, I need money." They didn't even get into the gold press latinum thing.
Well, what was funny was Picard was in the cut scene right after that. He goes, "These are some artifacts that I've collected over the years."
No need for possessions yet. He's hoarding all these priceless archaeological finds.
Oh boy, I'm gonna give somebody credit for going through and curating.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, you know, they were watching it going, "Shenanigans," and then said, "Why don't I put together some videos?"
I can't believe somebody spent the time to do all this, but oh well, that's funny.
That is, if you want to, you got a Saturday afternoon or something to kill, there's six of them now, and they are funny.
Yeah, it's like, go kill your gut by laughing,
and you start going, yeah, I remember that, yeah, hey. Why didn't I think of that first?
Yeah.
It's so obvious now. Next up, we have Call of Reach, episode number 3, Lag in Real Life. Now, I'm not a big gamer, but I have played a few online and have seen lots of other people. And if you don't have the bandwidth, it really takes away from the experience because things start to jitter and jump all over the place.
Yeah.
So what these guys did is they made a real-life movie of playing a game. So they're walking around with their toys and all of a sudden somebody you know, zaps into the picture and zaps out because their bandwidth sucks.
And then comes back.
Yeah. And he runs by it like he's in the extreme left, middle, and right and gone. Like, what? What was that?
I know. I like the one where the guy's running up against the wall.
Yeah, and then disappears.
Yeah.
He's just kind of walking as he's trying to get past this wall.
I remember seeing this stuff. And what's funny, you look when you're playing these games, you look at them and you go, this looks so weird. But then again, you're in a virtual world anyway. But it's like your mind plays that trick with you going, wow, this is really freaky. And
it looks so real.
Running against the wall or his lag. Yeah, it's terrible.
And then he shoots one guy about 8 times, but he won't die for some reason, but must be bandwidth.
Yeah, that is funny.
That was good. Call of Reach, episode number 3, lag in real life.
Speaking of video games. Yeah, since they're turning everything into a movie, why not Pac-Man, the movie?
And you know, I thought this would be kind of stupid, but watching the trailer, this could be a workable film. It's about a government project for an energy source, and it goes down into the deep secret bowels of this, you know, computer engineering thing, and you know, they got to put on the goggles and whatnot, and the computer operators fire it up, and there's Pac-Man, and the way they render the ghosts and stuff is really, I think it's well done. Somebody put a lot of work into this.
Yes, very much so. But yeah, I was like you. I thought, wow, this could really be a film.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking, could it really be a film, or is it just a lot better than I thought it was going to be?
Like most trailers?
Yeah.
Yeah, they show you. They show you the best parts in the trailer, so we probably saw the whole thing.
Well, it is technically 7 minutes. It's 6 minutes. It's not a real movie.
They had an acronym for Pac-Man. It was the polymorphic something cyber manipulator or whatever it was. It was
yeah. And I went, oh, okay. I can
buy
that.
It worked for the trailer.
Yeah, love the techno babble.
And last but not least, one of my favorites. Craig, you found this over at Make Zine. This is a warm-hearted story. I got misty watching this, to be honest. This was so well done. This is about a little 9-year-old boy named Kane who worked with his dad at the auto parts store. Well, he didn't really work. He just kind of hung out. And he started getting these boxes. And Kane is kind of a DIY guy in training. He's at the take apart stage, but doesn't really put things back together. So he started gathering up some cardboard boxes, and he likes arcade. He likes going to Shakey's Pizza or Chuck E. Cheese or whatever and playing the arcade games. So he started making his own arcade games. He made cardboard arcade stuff. He started with a little miniature basketball game, and he set up shop in the front of his dad's auto parts store. Well, they're in East L.A., and since a lot of people are buying their auto parts and things online, even through them, he wasn't getting a lot of foot traffic until one day this guy stops by to pick up what was like a door handle for an old Chevette or something. And
a door handle, like a knob.
Yeah. And he walks up to the boy and he goes, what do you got? And he goes, this is my arcade. And he's got a shirt on. It says Kane's Arcade on the back and staff on the front. And this little kid is just so optimistic and bright. He goes, how much is it? He goes, you get 4 plays for $1 or you can buy a fun pass. And he goes, how much for a fun pass? He says, 500 plays for $2. He goes, well, that's a deal.
I'll buy that for $2.
I just watched that this last weekend. And we made reference to that playing golf last week, too. Every time someone made a good putt, I'd say, I'd buy that for $1. But anyway, back to Kane. So this guy gets the idea. He says, I'd like to make a short film. And I won't ruin it for you, but it turns into a flash mob. Dad and Kane go out. Dad's fully aware of what's going on because the guy's making a film on it. He puts it on the website. He gets a Facebook page going. It's on the front page of Reddit. He's got dozens and dozens of people there. And Kane gets back, and you can see what happens by going to the link in the show notes. But it is just so priceless. I mean, just to make one kid's day for all his hard work. I thought there were two parts that just struck me as awesome.
What's
when
that?
you made a goal or shot a basket or something, you got tickets, and Kane would crawl into the box behind the box and shove the tickets that he earned from another arcade. He shoved the tickets out the slot, so it was like it was dispensing real tickets. The other one is on the back of the Fun Pass, you had a pin and a number to verify. So Kane went out and bought these old calculators and taped them to the boxes, and he explains what you do. You type in your pin, which would be like 25, and you hit the check mark, which is the square root symbol.
It's correct,
Only his pin would be like, 143. And then you hit the square root, and he says, you type in your pin and you hit the check mark, and out comes this really big number. And that was what was on the back of your Fun Pass, so you could verify you weren't cheating.
That's pretty funny.
I had the biggest grin on my face the whole time. I showed this to Donna and Lisa this last weekend, and they loved it. I just thought that.
Yeah.
He kind of reminds me of Kevin Devon's son, Daniel, at that age.
He does kind of look like him a little bit.
So cute.
But, I will tell you what struck me about this. Now that after I saw it, it changed the way I look at Harrison. Because I think they go, oh, Dad, I want to do this. And he gets excited about something.
Go build it.
And I think of all the time. Well, I think of all the times that I've said, no, it won't work. Or, maybe I ended up not meaning to, but I just discouraged him. Then I'm watching this. I'm like, what a jerk I was. I should never do that. So, and you know what? I won't do it again. If he says, I'm going to paint. Well, yeah, I'm not going to paint the house. But you know what I mean.
Dad, can I build a car? Knock yourself out.
Well, actually, a good example is him, Harrison and his friend Sadler. They, you may remember, they made a video, a movie, and we had a premiere and all that stuff. Well, they made another one or started working on another one the other day. So I'm like, all right, that's cool. Here, I'll give you the iMac for a little while, and you can edit the movie yourself, and I'll show you how to do it. So let him... I want to encourage him now instead of, not that I was discouraging him from anything, but
yeah,
what I'm saying? I just overly want to help him. Just do it.
Yeah. Introduce him to new things. Cause that's the only way they're going to get exposed to it. Whether it's music, art, technology, have you sat him down and gone through some basic programming? Yeah. You never know.
You know what he did the other day? He went to a science class. It was Intro to Robotics.
Very cool.
He had a good time. They were playing with some of those, the Lego NTX kits that have the sensors and stuff. Yeah, those. They were playing with
those. I wish they had those when I was a kid. I would have so ate that up.
I know. That's so wrong. But he's actually going to another one this summer that lasts more like 3 or 4 days. So I'm looking forward to see how that turns out for him.
You're right, though. I had kind of the same idea going, gee, what opportunities did I miss with my kids?
Man. Come on. Thanks, Kane.
Kudos to the dad for letting him do that. That is awesome.
He had a good attitude about it. I'll say that. Yep. He did. Yeah.
So, finally, let's hear what you did this last weekend.
Well, this last weekend, I went to Create South. This is the, fifth one? And Dave Slusher was doing a head count. How many been here for the last two? The last three? And it's like, when he got to the last five, it was like me and him and maybe two other people raised our hands. We've been here for all five.
Oh, my goodness.
So I just like going and sharing knowledge, which was the whole basis of Create South, is to go kind of network with people and meet space and share ideas, thoughts, ask questions, meet people with like-minded goals or, questions or whatever. So I did a talk on WordPress this last year, this last weekend. And thanks to you, I went from slides to actually making it to just a demo, doing it on the laptop and showing everybody how to install it, which was kind of the focus of the whole thing this year, was more hands-on, a little bit more scaled back, so it had a more intimate feeling. And I think it worked really well. They had a guy doing metallurgy, which was a nice surprise. He was making castings of the logo, the Create South logo. Everybody got to make one and carry it off with themselves.
Do they have a different logo every year?
No, it's essentially the same logo. It's the big C with the roots coming out the bottom. They had, I think it was Dome Candy, some guys that sell schematics so you can make your own speakers. And they had several examples in old luggage, like old suitcases and stuff. They would.
Oh, that's an awesome idea.
Like yeah, the old hard side. The woofers and everything. Yes, exactly. And,
steamer trunk speakers.
Yeah, you could do that. Well, I'll put the link in the show notes, and they sell stuff so you can recharge the battery in it. So all you do is plug up, you know, your audio source, and you're good to go. That was one. So they had beer, a beer talk about homebrew. Juliet did a talk on Pinterest, mm-hmm. you know, and also what's kind of fun is they do a lightning round of your project pitch. So this is the beginning after the keynote. Pip Ballantyne did the keynote. So did Heather Solos, who does the Home Ec 101 blog, and she wrote the book and everything. She also did a talk, and then afterwards they did the lightning round pitch, like project pitch. So everybody kind of gets up that wants to speak and say, if I got a project and I'm looking for somebody that can animate, maybe I'll explain my project and see if there's anybody in the room that wants to help. Same thing. If somebody wants to be an author and needs a mentor, you know, that kind of thing. Just whatever. Or if they just want to throw their idea out there and see what people think. So they got just a couple of minutes to come up there, do their pitch, and get a reaction or do whatever and kind of move on. So that was a lot of fun. Of course, the catered barbecue from the purveyors of pork. It's always good. So, yeah, I had a good time.
That idea where you're sharing, you know, subject matter expert knowledge almost sounds like something that we're going to do for our presentation in Orlando, the 26th, doing a co-presentation on you know, social IT. It's not about the technology, it's about the people. You want to get your subject matter experts on board. So we're going to ask everybody in the room, what are you a subject matter expert on? Are you a hardware weenie? Are you? It could be IT related or not. And I'm going to say things like podcasting and karate and, you know,
omit the word weenie, maybe you might get more response.
Expert, resource, other words that
resource.
Yeah, so that just kind of brought that to mind. So,
are you a hardware goob?
We will be doing a show for the 25th. So we will have a show that week, but not the next week, because I'll be out of town that week, and it'll be hard to find
stuff. The week of the 29th or whatnot?
We'll play it by ear, but we hope to see you online. You know what?
That's probably a good thing, because I'm camping with the scouts that week, and I'm sure I'll be exhausted at the end of the
day. We're going to do these as much as we can within physical and family limitations. We appreciate you giving us your support every time you listen. An angel gets its wings. Something like that.
Ding.
Sure, believe what you want.
Yeah.
If you like this show, there are many ways to show us your love. You can call the listener line. We haven't heard from you in a while. 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-2428. We'd love to hear from you. Or just email us. You're sitting at your computer now, probably. Technorama@chuckchat.com. Let us know what you think. What stories do you like? What stories don't you like? What do you want us to cover? What don't you want us to cover?
Boxers or briefs?
Vi or Emacs?
Anything. Yeah.
And we'll go on for that. But just visit the website. You'll find all the ways to contact us and donate and all that good stuff. Thank you very much to all the people who have been doing the monthly micropayments and helping offset the cost of the production and hosting and all that other good stuff. Thank you, thank you, thank you very much. And thanks to Matt Marv. He's also been providing great blog content during the week. If you're not going to the website or subscribing to the RSS feed, you should. It's a lot easier than going the old manual route. That's so 2000 late.
Carrier pigeons?
Right. Smoke signal. Podcast via smoke signal.
Yeah.
Thank you to everybody who sent us links during this week. We had so many good stories. We just couldn't fit them all in. We're going to try and get those on the website or share them on Twitter or wherever. We appreciate you passing those along to us and those who joined us in the Hangout or would have joined us in the Hangout if we had done this on a regular night, 9:30 Eastern time on Sunday night. We'd love to see you there. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with whole bunch of shows over at farpointmedia.com, and lots of good stories about golfing go with that.
Yeah.
Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and as always, a binary high five.
Ooh, 101.
Is there a checksum on that?